Sessions in Depth Psychology is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. Your host is Bonnie Bright. Hello, I'm Bonnie Bright, and welcome to this new series, Discussions in Depth Psychology, and this is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. I'm an alumna of Pacifica, and I completed my doctorate here, and so really this series is about giving back to depth psychology and looking at ways that we can extend depth psychology into the world. So I'm here today with my guest, Glenn Slater, who has a background in both religious studies and clinical psychology. And Glenn teaches Jungian and archetypal psychology at Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara, and he edited and introduced the third volume of James Hillman's uniform edition, Senex and Puer, as well as a volume of essays by Pacifica faculty, Varieties of Mythic Experience, and he has contributed a number of articles to Spring Journal and other Jungian publications, many of them in the area of Jung and film, and this is the topic that we're going to be talking a lot about today. Glenn's offering a special salon, Jung Individuation and Film, and that's on Friday, February 19th at Pacifica Graduate Institute. So everybody can go to pacifica.edu to check that out and get information. And that's a free public program. So that should be really interesting. So thanks for being here with me, Glenn. Happy to have you here.
It's very good to be here.
Well, I'm really excited about talking about this topic with you because I know that you have a long history in this and there's a lot of opportunities to keep this going on a daily basis. Everybody can go see a film at any point in time, but you can also now with technology download and have access to so many different kinds of film. So it's really exciting. I'm curious what your interest in film is, if you have a background in making film, if it's more about loving it, or is there something else?
Well, I've had a long love of film. I remember going to specific films in my childhood. I think the first film I went to see was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. My grandfather took me to that film, and I still, to this day, I must have been 4 or 5, and I still remember the theater and the screen, and it was one of those, I guess, threshold crossings. And I loved film right into my teen years, which sort of overlapped with what a lot of people regard as the sort of high point of Hollywood in the 70s. And I would sneak into films that I was underage for, like Apocalypse Now. And, and these films really shaped my interest in depth psychology. When I finally came across reading Jung, I think because of what I had taken in and thought about in terms of the journeys that these protagonists go on in film, I could recognize more easily what Jung was talking about, particularly when he talked about the individuation process.
Yes, so that's something that we should talk a little bit about here for sure. Most people that are listening to this will be familiar with Jung and, of course, with the process of individuation, but how do the two tie together specifically? So you mentioned this in conjunction with the hero's journey or the journey that the characters go on in the film.
Yeah, because I think I use that term crossing the threshold, which is a very Campbellian idea and part of the beginning of the hero's journey. And a lot of people in the film industry have taken a great interest in Campbell because that model of the hero's journey, which in a way roughly corresponds to what Jung was talking about with individuation, but it's very evident in film. But specifically to Jung, I would say we could think of individuation as the experience of coming to your unique self, your deep character. But it's also paradoxically at the same time coming to the place where you make a contribution to the human story. So there's something about the individuation process that's both deeply personal and at the same time transpersonal, because it has a shape, it has an architecture, which is archetypal. It is universal patterns with specific moments, specific figures, but also to individuate at any given time in a particular culture, moment of history, means finding a deep relationship to those energies that are coming up from the collective psyche. So Jung famously said, no one individuates on a mountaintop. Yeah. And the idea here, I think, is that at the same time you are growing into your own genius, as it were, you are making a an important and unique contribution. Are you finding where your own life resonates with what is emerging collectively?
Yeah, and I think we've all had those experiences of watching a film and just being so engaged by one or another of the characters and relating to it on a very deeply personal level, because it's reflecting a story maybe that is resonating with us, or a complex that's living within us, or an archetypal pattern that's at work in our lives.
Yeah, so we need models for this. We need mirrors, and I think films today, they are our stories. They're the place we go to for myth. And at the core of that experience is watching a main character, a protagonist, find their way, confront challenges that in a good film move them towards a goal which is obviously external but is also internal at the same time. So they're finding who they are in a deeper way as they go through the process. And I think we love to see that. We love to see characters go through change, transformation. But sometimes it's not so transformative as just coming into a deeper awareness of who you are.
Yeah, I love what you said about what I thought about when you said that was the idea of the outside and the inside kind of coming into some sort of connection with each other, or some sort of balance, or I don't know if it's wholeness really, but both of those have to be addressed, right? That's a very core idea in depth psychology, that we have to look at both.
Yeah. I have a feeling that we live in a culture that has largely adopted the sort of dualistic frame of reference, where the outside world doesn't seem to have too much to do with what goes on inside of our heads. And film is, by its very character, a melding of inner and outer. You know, when filmmakers are trying to show us what's going on inside someone's head, they can't do what a novelist does and describe a stream of thoughts. They've got to externalize it. They've got to show it in what's happening, the kinds of clothes people wear, the cars they drive, and the mood and atmosphere that they create. In terms of this last round of films that's out there now, I think the film Carol does that exceptionally well, and Todd Haynes, the director, is masterful at creating moods and atmospherics and sort of movements around the characters that expose what's happening within the character. So we all deeply long for a vision which is more unitive, in which what happens outwardly is somehow connected or symbolic. It's almost like an enchantment. You know, I think we often go to films to be somewhat enchanted and to recover that sense of magic or enchantment about the way the inner and outer relate.
Oh, that's so true. That really resonates with me. And so, of course, I'm recognizing, much in the same way as I watch a film, what you're saying is touching something in me. And so that sense of magic or enchantment is, it's almost like a spell, isn't it? It kind of draws us in and brings us there. And in that way, I think that film really serves as a portal to the unconscious.
Yes.
And so it pulls us into examining, whether we're conscious of it or not, maybe resonating or relating to something that's going on under the surface of our normal sort of everyday life.
Right. Well, it's very typical for a protagonist at the beginning of the film to not really know consciously where they're meant to go or what they're meant to do. And typically in a film, the main character is on some kind of course, and then an event occurs, and that event seems to spark this idea that there is something else they need to serve. And often, as Campbell famously pointed out in The Hero's Journey, there is at first a refusal of that call, and then it's as if the forces that are sort of fatefully aligned to draw the character into their deeper destiny strike again, and finally the character's won over. I mean, a fairly obvious example of this would be the character of Han Solo in Star Wars, who's in his conscious world sort of off doing his edge of the law sort of tricksterish stuff, And then these events come along in which a deeper heroic sense of serving something larger than him is drawn out. And we just love to see that moment occurring over and over again up until this, you know, last iteration and the Force Awakens.
Yeah. Yeah, it provides a kind of context for us. And I think on many levels, we are actually living vicariously through the characters that we see on the screen as it's reflecting or echoing something, some pattern that's going on in our own lives.
Yeah.
How do you begin, Glenn, to look at a particular film from a Jungian or a depth psychological perspective? I mean, we've kind of been circling that, but you've done a lot of reviews, and it's always so fascinating for me with a passion for depth psychology to look at how we can sort of bring that lens to a film.
Right, right. Well, it definitely relates to this idea that the outward world is somehow reflective of the inner world. And you make that bridge with symbolic thought, with the idea that what occurs externally is metaphorical of some inner process. And of course, Jung's psychology is bathed in this symbolic perspective. Sometimes individuation is loosely referred to as living the symbolic life. So instead of being egocentric and thinking of everything in terms of what you consciously know, you look at events with a kind of curiosity and you say, what is this maybe saying on a deeper level? So you take that perspective into the film, and you also, from Jung, have a great toolbox in terms of his description of these major archetypes that turn up in life, like the shadow, like the wise person, the mentor figure, like the lover, the soulmate, the sort of inner companion, the muse. And so these are figures that show up in films, and they support the individuation process in some way, or there'll be a trickster character that tries to kind of divert the movement towards the call, but in doing so, just sort of galvanize the sense of drive in the protagonist. So I think Jung, in describing some of these archetypal patterns, really helps us see and understand these moments and these figures that may be outer figures, but they're also at the same time inner archetypal figures.
Very much so, yes. And I think we can all point to some of those that are particularly at play in our lives in any given moment.
Yeah,
so, you know, with again, I had mentioned with the proliferation of our access to media, we can find almost any film we want at any given time on some device or another, or online or streaming or something. And when I think about film, I think about the word soul. And we don't always use them in the same sentence with one another, I guess. But do you feel that there is anything lost or gained, or what is your perspective on this sort of proliferation of media and us having more and more access to it?
Well, I think it confronts us with a process of discernment. And to me, the litmus test, you know, there's a lot of film, there's a lot of media that is, I think, just entertainment or even just distraction.
Yes.
And we walk out of the film and we're sort of amused or taken out of our everyday thought for a little while. But once we walk out of the film, we're not inclined to reflect upon it. It doesn't stay with us. So to me, the litmus test is when you walk out of a film or you've watched something at home, does it stay with you? Does it linger? Does it make you think? Does it come back to you in the same way that a powerful dream might sort of linger during the day and come back to you? So to me, that helps us discern, you know, the material that's really touching the psyche at a deeper level.
Yeah, I really like that. I like the word linger to begin, but that does really create a visual and an emotional connection for me. In fact, I feel that in my body, and I think that's the same kind of experience that we often have when we're watching film, is we feel things in our body, and when that happens, you know that something has landed with you.
Right, right. You know, and it doesn't it doesn't mean that a film has to be European or intellectual or made by Woody Allen or something like that. I think a lot of popular film that is well done and has an underlying vision can also serve that purpose. This past year, I really enjoyed the latest Mad Max film, Fury Road, with this character played by Charlize Theron, right. Furiosa. And that would be an example in my mind of how a protagonist can resonate with something that's coming into the cultural psyche. So there's a lot of talk, as you know, in Jungian circles about the return of feminine values because we live in a very masculinized culture. And so it's fascinating to see these female heroes that coming into the picture that carry a different value system and end up winning through and saving the day. So even in a kind of action road movie like Mad Max, there is this other thematic that's breaking through. You could even say that sort of post-apocalyptic scenario that's shown in those films is offering us a palette for the remaking of the world. What are the new values and energies that need to come in order to drive the process forward? So it's fascinating to look at films from that angle as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost as if this new energy is infusing our zeitgeist. I think by going to films, we can see what's sort of on the horizon, what the possibilities and the potentiality are,
yes,
for our culture.
Very much so, yeah. You know, to me, another example of that's very strong in the American film world, particularly quality American films, is that very often the protagonist is moving not up and out into the light, but down into the underworld. I think of a film like American Beauty, for example, which I think is a really fine American film, because it shows the individuation process and it also gives us a snapshot of the cultural psyche.
Mm-hmm.
The main character, Lester Burnham, in that film is really deepening into himself. He's really being initiated into some of these darker aspects and he's sort of fumbling around and sometimes he doesn't know where he's going and he almost makes some huge mistakes. But at the same time, it's almost like a baptism. So even he tells us at the beginning of the film, he's only got a year to live. So we all know that. But in that year, he gains a consciousness of this sort of shadow side of American life. And that seems to be a big thing among intelligent filmmakers, is showing us that there is a shadow side there, mm-hmm, that is different to all these heroic values that are usually held up in American culture.
Yeah, very much so. And in that way, obviously raising consciousness and awareness among people that there is something beyond sort of the surface. And in that way, it's very depth psychological to go to film and to really look at them from a more, I guess, active sort of stance rather than just going to be passively entertained.
Yeah. You know, I tend not to sit there and be too analytical when I first see a film. I just want to enjoy it. But as I say, if the film stays with you and makes you start thinking, what's that about? And you get interested in maybe what the filmmaker and screenwriter were really thinking. Along the same lines, another favorite film of mine is Million Dollar Baby, which I think is Clint Eastwood's masterpiece in many ways. And the protagonist there, even though the film circles around this female boxer, Maggie, the protagonist is really the Clint Eastwood character, Frankie, and the journey that he has to go through, which does go into some very dark places, but in the end there is this redemption. There is this hint of redemption. So it's very powerful to see that little bit of consciousness or light or transformation emerging from the dark surrounds and the woundedness.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's definitely where it's possible for us to start visualizing and seeing the individuation process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a word, a very fundamental word that we use often in the field of Jungian and depth psychology, and that is soul. Mm. How would you apply that to film?
I think soul comes in when there's a sense of something outside the ego that is directing or shaping our experience, so that we are drawn into a feeling that there is another presence, or that there are other presences at work. Some people might think of it as a sort of a spiritual dimension. But James Hillman, who was a prominent Jungian psychologist that we talk a lot about at Pacifica, thought of soul as that dimension of experience where that spiritual comes into the world, comes into the everyday, comes into embodied experience. So for him, the sense of soul requires something that is substantive, that is worldly, that is felt, that isn't just, you know, an idea or a thought or a fantasy. So I think soul is related a little bit to the magic and the enchantment. You know, when we walk into a room and we think of it as having a soulful atmosphere, it's almost as if we suspect the presence of something else. You know, a history, a tradition, that people have lived here, or that a lot has gone into creating the aesthetic. So I would say, you know, soul has to do with that feeling that there's much more there than meets the eye. There is a depth, but that depth is animated, the presence.
Presence. Yeah, I like that. And I suppose, of course, all films are stories. So mm-hmm. there's a huge element of storytelling that is involved in any given film. So you had mentioned mood, and of course we know the characters are really important. And there's this kind of conception, and which I'm sure is based on truth, that you can have a really good script for a film, and then of course it depends on the actors and the producer mm-hmm. and the director and all of that. But what do you think about soul in storytelling? What is the soul of storytelling in your opinion?
Well, to me, and this might reflect my Jungian bias or orientation, but soul comes into a story to the extent that the story has these archetypal resonances. So if the story touches upon the human story, the universal experience of being in this world and going through life, then it has soul. The trick here, or the challenge, is that filmmakers can't do that and fall into cliches or stereotypes, because if they do, it ends up looking superficial to us, or fabricated. So very often when I'm talking about archetypes in class, I say that one of the ways to tell the presence of an archetype is when the universal and the unique up together simultaneously. So it's like, you know, that bar scene in the first Star Wars film. We'd all seen that scene before because it's in every Western movie that's ever been made. And yet at the same time, we'd never seen a bar like that with characters like that. And it was so fresh and so lively and so riveting that it was unique, it was different and universal. And that's what I think produces an archetypal and a soulful experience in storytelling. Yeah, this new Star Wars film's interesting in that regard, and some people I think will look at it and say, well, I see them reaching a little bit too much back into the past, and yet it is its own story with new protagonists and the young woman who is, I think, a very compelling character. So it's at least moving in that territory. If it's too stereotypical, it's as if what a film has to do is engage our imaginations. Because when we go to a film, we're not really passively just watching the film, like information being taken in. We have to imagine into the film. The images activate our imagination. We ask ourselves, what's really going on with this character? What is their motivation? What's going to happen next? We're in a whole imaginative mode. And so for that to happen, for the imagination to really be set on fire, I think these archetypal patterns almost by definition have to be activated.
Absolutely. Yeah, engaging the imagination. And I really liked your description of an archetype as combining the universal and the unique. I think that that's an absolute critical piece. And it's interesting because when you look at those words, they seem to be opposites of each other. We had also earlier talked about the inside versus the outside and combining those. So it seems to me that film or a good story or good storytelling is also really about almost holding the tension of those opposites and seeing what emerges from those.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I think a good filmmaker, when they approach a particular scene, has to look at it with both eyes at the same time. They're obviously telling a literal narrative, and that has to be done well. But at the same time, what they're showing has another significance. It's metaphorical. It reflects an inner dynamic.
Definitely. Well, this has been so enlightening and really interesting. I'm really happy to have had the chance to have this conversation. I heard a rumor, Glenn, that you're writing a book on the psychology of the post-human movement and related to implications for living in the digital age. Do you want to just say something about that briefly?
Well, yeah, I've been working on it for quite a while. but it's a theme that I think is really up in the culture because there's so many trends that point towards our merging with our computer technology and moving towards implanted chips and virtual reality and life that is more lived in cyberspace. All of these things. And I'm just very curious about what this is saying in terms of the psyche and how the psyche is reacting, responding. Where does that fantasy come from in an archetypal way? And what might the implications? What happens to soul as we live into this new world? So that's what I'm spending my time on.
Sounds fascinating. And maybe some of the recent films that have to do with high technology and cyborgism and those kinds of things will make it into the book.
Yeah, I think it was probably right on a year ago that the film Ex Machina came out.
Right.
A very fine film that explores these questions in an interesting way.
Indeed, indeed. Well, thank you so much, Glenn. Glenn is offering a special salon on Jung, Individuation, and Film, and that happens on Friday, February 19th on the Lambert Road campus at Pacifica Graduate Institute. So everybody is invited to come out to that. That's a free public program. And really, thank you so much, Glenn, for being with me.
Good, good. I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Discussions in Depth Psychology, powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute with host Bonnie Bright.